Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Hello and welcome to Season 4 of the Believe in Overwatch League podcast from the Believe Podcast Network. We are Matt and Kevin, and each week we're bringing you news about gaming, pop culture, and of course, Overwatch.
This week we cover game rentals, Blizzard, and more Overwatch League.
Hello, hello, everybody. Welcome to week 3 of the Believe in Overwatch League podcast. Hope you are having a great end of May. It's hard to believe that like next week is going to be June. Like, we'll be halfway through the year.
No, yeah. I only determine time in terms of anime seasons. So, yeah, we'll get there.
I'm so behind on like watching any anime. Like, I'll get pretty far in a series and I'll just completely fall off. Like, I'm 3 seasons behind My Hero. I need to watch the entire like last season of Attack on Titan. I have the rest of season 2 to watch of Demon Slayer. And then that's not even to mention like I was going to go and watch like old stuff. Like, I was gonna watch Evangelion, I was gonna watch JoJo's, I was gonna watch Cowboy Bebop again. Nope, not happening. So how have you been, Kevin, besides measuring time in Japanese cartoons?
Pretty stressed, not gonna lie. I'm finishing up my last week at the escape room before I take a hiatus. Because I got another position, which I can now officially disclose. I am a summer camp instructor for UC Berkeley Esports.
Ooh.
So
what does that
entail
for you?
Yeah, so I will be teaching kids like essentially life lessons through gaming, but also just like how to play on a pro team, like the kind of mentality that you need to have in order to play at the highest level. Mm-hmm. And like it could be any game, but preferably like games that I know. So I might be playing, you know, more Overwatch, maybe a bit of Valorant, Pokemon, VGC, depends on what the kids really want to learn. And it's all about like just being able to like teach them like the joys of, you know, competitive gaming. Whether it is just through the, you know, esports part of it, of like the competing half of it, or if it is through like the media and the streaming part of it. So mm-hmm. It's kind of a fun job for now, but it is a summer gig. So hopefully I could snowball that into something more permanent later down the line. Hopefully I can do that. But we will see how it goes, especially with everything else. And the reason why I'm mainly stressed is because like there's so much paperwork.
Oh god.
That goes into it. Like, not only did I have to do like fingerprints, background checks, like I'm in the middle of doing like first aid training. Then that, like, I had to do like a 7-hour course like online of that training, and then sit through like 4 different meetings about protocol and stuff like that. And it's not even done yet. I still have to take like an in-person CPR class. So it's just like a lot of paperwork, a lot of like things that I didn't like. I was one of the last people to get brought on, so all of the stuff is like just snowballing onto that, and then I'm still working at the escape room, you know, 8 hours a day. So it's just been a lot of stuff just piling up.
So are you gonna have to make the curriculum of the summer camp, or is that like, is someone else helping you, or how's that going to happen?
So apparently there's like there's a very like basic like format.
Yeah.
And it's just like we do X, Y, and Z. And then the guy who runs the thing said like, hey, like the format is kind of loose. It's kind of like what we have like set and kind of what we promise what we would teach to the kids. But anything that goes into it, because it's like it's really not very like specific. It can be used to like show something else. So I can see if I can find it. But in the meantime, yeah, it's still really loose, and I'm fine with that. Like I'm fine with just like, I'm fine with like kind of creating my own curriculum and things that the students kind of want to focus on, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's better. I think it's always better for kids when they have some input on what they're doing and what they're learning, especially over summer, and especially with something cool like video games, you know?
Yeah, like I don't want to teach a kid, you know, a certain game that they don't want to play. So it's way better if I let them enjoy what they can learn, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
What about you, Matt? How's everything going on your end? How's everything going?
It's a little less stressful this week than it has been. I only had rehearsal one day today, so I just had a little bit of more time to chill. I got to play a little bit of Overwatch today. I also had to run out today and help my sister get stuff for her grad cap, because she is graduating tomorrow and it's her birthday tomorrow, so it's going to be a very big day for her tomorrow. So this is. Ugh, it's gonna be a lot. Also, like this is our last week working with DC, so our last full week. We have technically only Tuesday next week because Monday is a holiday. Oh my god, I'm so excited for that holiday Monday. But yeah, so since Monday is a holiday, Tuesday is our last day working with DC, which should be interesting because we're going to the office, and I'm going to the office to work for the first time, and apparently there's a whole bunch of just DC garbage that we're trying to get rid of. So they said bring a duffel bag so I can take free stuff home. It's late, I'm tired, I'm not wording properly.
It's all good.
But then also I'm moving on to work on the Lord of the Rings show for Amazon, so I will be doing the social media for that. We get to, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I doubt they listen to the podcast, but I will be next week getting to see a little bit of what the show is looking like, so I'm excited for that. And now I have to go find a copy of The Lord of the Rings to like read the appendices, because that's what the show is based on. It's not based on the Silmarillion like I thought it was going to be. No, it's based on the appendices of like the Return of the King, so like 150 pages of just random backstory that Tolkien wrote.
Yeah, so it's crazy.
So Kevin, like you sent me this esports camp thing.
Yeah. So this
the
is just
the
basis.
Though.
The header photo is kind of a yikes, but
it's got Sinatra on there, so that's why it's the little bit of a yawn.
Yeah, I mean, it's Sinatra, Moth, you know, like old SF Shock, and I'm like, come on, guys, just
couldn't have had anyone other than Sinatra on there. Like Moth, we're fine.
I don't know, man. I'm not the one who made the banner, so.
But also, how could they not know if they're an esports thing?
They're not. This is a brand new camp. They said it's literally made this year, so I gotta let them know, like, hey. Don't do that. But this is just like really basic. It is for it is for students who are in middle school right now, so it's not a lot of like things that I do need to hit, which is pretty nice, honestly. So Yeah, it starts at 9 a.m. and then goes to like 4. And most of it is just like, it's more like team building, gameplay, focusing on like certain like skills in order to like get them ready. And I have them for 5 days a week. So just being able to kind of tell them like, hey, this is what you guys want to focus on. This is what I want like you guys to be most comfortable with, and so on and so forth. So I really do hope that, you know, I hope that people enjoy it. And if anything, the kids get to have, you know, a lot of fun at least trying to learn esports, or at least having fun with like playing the games in general. But yeah, it's not like very descriptive, which is pretty okay. So for me, when it comes to like teaching this class, like the teacher just said like, hey, like this is kind of just like the basics, but like you can kind of do whatever as long as there's like a certain like amount that needs to get in there. So
yeah.
And then it's kind of weird too, because like I had to take like this class about like essentially teaching what I can and cannot do. And one of them was like, oh yeah, you shouldn't have the personal like information of, you know, any of your students, which makes sense, but yeah. Like at the same time, it becomes like, if I cannot, like, I'm not supposed to, like, you know, interact with them after hours, which is fine. But at the same time, it becomes like, what if I need to set up a scrim for them, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, what if I want them to face off against, like, ArtU or something like that? Or, you know, the Berkeley B team. How would I get that information to them without telling them to, like, you can't add me? Like, we have to go and create like a custom lobby and then like have to jump through like 80 hoops in order to make it happen. But
yeah,
it is kind of a pain in that fact. But I do think that like once I get, you know, once I figure out like how the kids want to play the games and what they want to do, I could definitely get them into the proper mindset to have fun, right? And enjoy esports, which is going to be a lot of fun.
2 p.m. virtual reality, optional and or additional esports gameplay?
Yeah, so we can have a VR break if we wanted to, which is one thing that I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, I could go and like be like, okay, guys, we're going to play Beat Saber. we're all just going to go in here. We're going to play some Super Hot for fun. We're just going to shake things up and then go back into tournament and competitive play immediately after. But for the most part, it is probably just going to leak into like essentially like after lunch. There's like a little bit of like there's like a half hour of like discussion of like things that we should focus on. And then it just becomes 2 hours of just straight practice of like, we're about to like try this out. I hope that you guys enjoy, you know, figuring out certain things that you guys want to try in game. And yeah, I feel like that's going to be interesting. So it depends on like if I get kids who like love Overwatch, right? Mm-hmm. I'm definitely going to be like, okay, so we're going to go talk about positioning. We're going to talk about certain strategies. We're going to go try it on certain maps. If it works, it works. If not, you know, it's all good. Learn about timing, shot calling, like all that kind of stuff. So it sounds like a lot of fun. And I'm kind of excited to see where this goes, because it's not going to be like right out the gate, like I have a couple weeks to go ahead and like test everything.
Yeah.
So like essentially after Memorial Day week, like the weekend weekend, I have like some classes that I could go ahead and sit down and like talk to people about the curriculum and what they want to teach. But the thing that I like definitely want to get out of it is like I want to inspire the next generation of gamers to like understand like, hey, there's a lot more than just like playing the game and being good. Like,
yeah.
There is teamwork. There's coordination. There's a lot of things that go beyond the game that make good esports players. And if I could teach that to them, that's the most important thing that comes out of it, you know?
Yeah. There's skills to be learned in esports that are not initially apparent.
Yeah, it's like playing, once again, it's like playing basketball. It's all a matter of like getting everybody on the same page and then making it work out. if that works, it works. It's going to be great. So I hope that that is what I could instill onto these kids.
Well, good luck. Hopefully that all turns out well for you. It seems like a very exciting opportunity for the kiddos.
Yeah, and if you guys are interested or happen to be in the Berkeley area, you can still sign up for these classes. It is through Berkeley Recreational Sports. So if you guys are going to, you know, if you guys want to have me as a teacher, I guess you guys could show up and try it. Or if your kid wants to try it, definitely like bring them in. I'll teach them Overwatch. I'll teach them whichever games like they want to try. As long as I have like a somewhat understanding of it, we should be good. And I wouldn't even put it past me if they decided to be like, hey, we're going to do like, we're gonna teach these kids how to play Mario Party. I'm like, okay, sure.
Oh, God.
Like competitive Mario Party 1v1s, let's go.
All right, so let's get into the news of the week. A little bit of a fun NFT update for y'all. So you know Seth Green, right, Kevin?
I think so. Who would be?
He is the guy who created, or I think he at least co-created Robot Chicken. He plays Chris on Family Guy.
Oh, okay.
He's Scotty in the Austin Powers movies. So,
yeah,
he's a rather well-known like comedian actor in the comedian actor space. But so apparently he's also been very into collecting the NFTs, and he was even at one point building a show completely around his rather large NFT collection. There's actually a trailer that for his show that was supposed to be coming out that was created. The show is called, or I don't know if to use is or was in this, because his show White Horse Tavern was supposed to be centered around his Bored Ape NFT. I think he had one Bored Ape, like two mutant apes or whatever. But it was centered around his ape Fred Simeon. But apparently Seth Green got scammed and he lost all of his, or a bunch of his NFTs. I think he had four NFTs stolen and immediately bought up by other people. So now he no longer owns the rights to those characters. And when like when your show is built around a character and you no longer have the rights to that character, it's kind of hard to have a show. So the person who owns the NFT is not going to return the NFT. Like, he's not just going to give it to Seth Green, because apparently he paid a lot of money for it. I think it was around $200,000 he paid for this PDF. And so he said he's willing to like reach out and talk to Seth Green about it, but he's not just going to give him back his rights to this monkey, because according to this individual, they paid for it fair and square. There was like no ill intent towards this. And like the NFT ownership thing and the scamming is like, according to some of the articles I've written, it's such a new space that the courts, if this does go to court, because Seth Green is potentially implying that if he doesn't get the rights to his NFT back, he's going to go to court. According to the articles that I've read, this is so new that there's no real legal precedent for it, and they don't know how to legislate it. Although it looks like, from what certain legal experts are saying, the courts will likely swing in the direction of, if you're buying an NFT, you should have done more due diligence on who the previous owner was, and if this was like legally theirs to sell or rightfully theirs to sell. But yeah, I mean, the show looks like, you've seen like The Amazing World of Gumball or like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, right, Kevin?
Mm-hmm.
The show is kind of like that. It's like real people in a bar. The monkey is the bartender, and it's like these people interacting with these cartoon characters in like a live action animation hybrid show, which is like, this is weird. You went from like the highs of Robot Chicken to this, Seth Green. Why?
I don't know. It might have just been like a commentary of like how crazy or how, you know, how far can you push it? So I think that was,
I suppose.
I'm a little interested in just seeing what he decided or what he's going to try to do with it, you know? I don't know. Just getting out of the whole NFT thing in general was, you know, a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a good as reason any to get out of NFT, Seth. So moving on, this is an article that popped up randomly as I was scrolling through Facebook. But there's the question that Forbes put in an article. One of their writers is like, is Metacritic still relevant? Now, if you don't know what Metacritic is, it's a review site where they kind of aggregate a bunch of, it's kind of like Rotten Tomatoes for video games. It's where they aggregate a bunch of different reviews and they kind of give it a an average critic score and then an average user score. And for a long time, I guess it was considered one of the better gauges of video games of what is worth the purchase, what is not, whether you should get a game, whether you should not. But according to Forbes, from what they have observed, Metacritic doesn't really have as much of a stranglehold on the industry and whether or not games are getting bought as it used to. The case study that they are mainly focusing on for at least this article was the brand new Evil Dead game that came out. It's kind of like, I guess, maybe Dead by Daylight, except it's completely focused on Bruce Campbell's Ash Williams from the Evil Dead franchise, of course. But the scores are kind of like middling. They're like mid to high sevens, but the game has apparently been doing pretty well, which I think has a lot to do with it being streamer bait. But according to Forbes's analysis, what they're believing is that people are not really caring about Metacritic as much, and they instead are just relying upon word of mouth, whether like or seeing the gameplay or having people recommend it to them or having a title that they're interested in and they want to try for themselves regardless of what other people say. I particularly haven't really use Metacritic all that much personally, but I know, I mean, just by like them aggregating a bunch of reviews and comparing them against like user reviews, I could kind of see it being considered a fairly accurate gauge. But then also there's games like Halo Infinite, which has a huge like Metacritic score, like an 87 for critics and 8.0 for users, but it's like still struggling right now to really remain relevant. Cyberpunk had a decently high score, but it's been dragged through the mud. So I'm not sure what really might have caused this shift, if this is in fact an accurate change in the industry and change of how Metacritic is kind of regarded. Because if you look at like Rotten Tomatoes, for instance, it continues to be just an absolute driver of whether people are going to watch a movie or not, regardless of whether people realize that it's like based on percentages of positive reviews, not like the average score it's given. Like, not going into Rotten Tomatoes, but it's a very different system. But Rotten Tomatoes continues to be like the golden standard of whether or not you should watch a movie, where I guess Metacritic might be falling off of that.
Yeah, it feels like I haven't used Metacritic in a long time. It really does just become like word of mouth, and like if people enjoy the game, they will talk about it and then other people will play it. So it's either that or like streamer culture, you know, like getting streamers involved in the games in general. That's also a really big plus. So I do think that might be the way to go about it, you know. If you are an up and coming game, just try to get people on board, and especially if it's a game that everybody likes, people will pick it up a lot more. So mm-hmm. it you might not have to rely more on the critic's take, but rather what the perception of your game is.
I know everybody has their like different standards of whether or not they want to buy a game, whether or not a game is worth it to them. But for you, Kevin, when you're looking at like what to purchase, what are your criteria for picking up a game, or for your, at least your interest in a game?
I really don't pick up that many games, but like when I do, it's mostly like, I do it for kind of a greedy reason. One is like either for like hanging out with friends, like having a game that you could play with people, and they could actually enjoy. The other half of it is like good replayable streamer content. If you have good content in general, people will be on board and want to like watch the gameplay and play with you, or you know, watch certain things. So like I don't pick up a lot of games that I wouldn't myself play. It's more of just like, as long as I have fun with the game and I know that I could play it for, I have like a certain rule to like determine if a game is good. The rule is like, for every dollar spent, you should be able to get an hour of gameplay. So like, if it is a great game for me, like let's say if it's like a $20 game, right? I got to get 20 hours out of that minimum. Whether it's like enjoying the story, enjoying, you know, replayability, or if it's just for like party sake and like having a ton of people over for entertainment sake, it is important to have that. So that's how I describe like if a game is good or not. If a game is free, it's like just good overall. If I play it for more than like, you know, I would say if I play it for more than like 10 hours, then it's considered a good game in my opinion.
Yeah, I kind of look for like that replay, like, am I getting my money's worth out of this game? Like, can I play this for a long time? I also like, I look for a lot of like series or, what's the word I'm looking for? Not IP, but just like, I guess maybe series or characters that like I particularly enjoy, or studios, like, or genres even too. I don't know. I kind of just pick up whatever is interesting and looks fun based on the trailers, to be honest. It doesn't always work out for me, but I mean, and then it comes, a lot of that just comes down to like picking up AAA games, because I don't know whether or not like the indie stuff is going to be worth my money. Like, for example, to bring back a very old wound, Artful Escape was just lauded by so many people, but I played it and it's not even a game, it's a walking simulator, and if I had paid money for that, I would have been so mad. I would have been just so insanely mad that I wasted however many dollars this was on a game that you don't even really have to play. Like, there's nowhere to fail it, there's no stakes in it, as opposed to like putting that money towards something like Hades, which was recommended to me, won a lot of awards, and like had actual good gameplay and a high replay value. Or something like Red Dead Redemption 2, which is AAA game, I played that game for so long and I kind of want to go back to it too. So there's the replay value, there's the length of time and everything. So I don't know what my actual criteria is. I just kind of pick up what looks fun.
I mean, that is it at the end of the day. It's just like, if the game is fun, you're going to play it.
Yeah.
I highly agree with that whole like sentiment. It should just be, if game is good, you will play it. Or like, at least if it looks interesting enough for you to pick it up. And that goes same thing with like my wish list on Steam too. It's like, what is this a game that I would try? It doesn't necessarily have to be good, it might not even be out yet, so it's just a matter of like, is it worth eating, or like worth putting the money into it to potentially like enjoy what it is. So like the one that I don't know right now, obviously it's not out yet, but Stray, have you heard of Stray before?
The name sounds very familiar. Have we talked about it? Was it the cat one?
Yeah, it's the cat one.
Okay.
So, yeah. Like, I don't know how that game's going to go. Like, I don't know if it's going to be a good game or a bad game at all. But I do like the idea of it. So, hopefully I enjoy the actual gameplay as well. We won't know until it comes out. But right now it's still word of mouth of, like, is this something that I would play right here, right now, and enjoy it.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, a lot of the games that I, indie games that I played, like, earlier this year and late last year were games that, like, looked fun, but I didn't know if I wanted to, like, spend my money on, and, like, Game Pass gave me the ability to do that. In a transition into our next topic, people are, like, debating whether or not Game Pass is really worth it, because a lot of people are unsubscribing from it, and what looks like is prompting this kind of mass exodus away from Game Pass, which, funny, was it was really touted as, like, one of the biggest features of having an Xbox over a PlayStation or having PC, was the access to Game Pass. But people are turning away from it because they don't feel like it's worth their money, because they're not getting a bunch of new AAA games in the service, especially with Starfield being pushed to next year and Redfall being pushed next year, which are two pretty big Bethesda games that a lot of people were really looking forward to. A lot of people are saying it's not worth my money because you're paying roughly $15 a month for Game Pass, and if there's, like, for them, it's like, there's nothing that I want to play right now that is worth this exorbitant amount of money. I'm just going to wait until the AAA games drop, and then I might come back. But then that also ignores, like, a lot of the, again, like, the indie games, or, like, the old games that, like, people were not able to play, maybe because they didn't have an Xbox back then, or, like, they just never picked up the game or want to give it a try or something. So there is validity in the AAA argument, but, like, when I can't remember who originally posted this article or posted a take on this, but Xbox Game Pass replied on Twitter said tell me you only play AAA games without telling me you only play AAA games, or something like that. But it was, like, hitting on people who don't give indie games or see the value in indie games as much as they do in AAA games, which is, like, again, it for the money aspect of it, I can understand, but for, like, the artistry and, I guess, innovation or growth of the industry, like, it's kind of a detrimental position to have, you know?
Yeah, and I do agree. Like, by only prioritizing AAA games, like, you may get on board with, like, playing some of these games and so on and so forth, but you lose out on the ability to support, like, indie games that might not get the chance in the spotlight. And if that happens to be the correct answer here, I hope that more, like, companies take a chance on smaller games, because usually those end up blossoming into something that can be very profitable later down the line.
Now, something else that was brought up, I guess, around this time, or in the articles that I've been reading, is that the former leader of Xbox, his name is Ed Fries or Freese, I don't know how that's pronounced, could be Fries or could be Freese, like Dr. Freeze. He was a former vice president of Microsoft Game Publishing, launched the original Xbox. In a podcast recently, his position on Xbox was that it scared him because he feels that it might be detrimental, or not Xbox. His position on Game Pass is that it might be detrimental to the industry as a whole, in that it might cause people to stop buying games. In looking at the model that Spotify did for the gaming industry, which is what he cited and is his basis for this kind of fear, Spotify kind of ruined the music industry, because previously, in order to listen to a song, you had to buy the album or buy the song individually. Now with services like Spotify, you really don't need to do that. You can just listen to it on Spotify, which took a lot of money away from like the music publishers and the musicians themselves. So now they're like forced to tour all the time, and that's how mostly musicians and artists and companies will get their money, is through those touring schedules, which has only gotten more grueling. And instead of like actual music sales, because a lot of people don't want to pay for music now when they can just either listen to Spotify for free or pay for a lower monthly fee, where they're not just getting what's limited to this album, they're getting the entire library of Spotify for that low price. So it's interesting to see that what his fears are compared to what is, I guess, actually currently happening with Spotify, and that people, I guess, would rather just buy the AAA game than pay for the streaming service because they're not feeling the value there, which is an interesting dichotomy that Spotify is succeeding where Game Pass, which was previously just completely seen as a godsend to gamers, is kind of floundering right now.
Yeah, it is kind of it does make it very difficult for gaming companies to promote smaller games if, you know, us as a player base only want the AAA games. And I do understand that it is kind of tough to hunker down on it, but that is kind of what our culture is in terms of getting the games that we want. We all have to focus in on these like ridiculous things such as Game Pass. And like, I do understand, like, people are not going to start buying games if they have access to it so early, or if they have it as kind of like a subscription-based model, essentially. People aren't going to want to buy the full thing, because why would I if I can get it for pretty cheap in the first place, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if that is going to be the case forever, but I hope that we can somehow change that, and more people go back to buying their games and like really supporting the creators that way.
It's just a strange thing to me that like with access to like indie games and how the industry is just flooded with indie games, and like Game Pass is an opportunity to play a lot of those that people aren't biting on. That like 12 Minutes was spectacular. I played another indie game called Superliminal, which was like a really fun, really cool mind trip that I never would have tried if not for Game Pass. And I'm wondering, is not to wish good on Microsoft, because I'm just not a fan of Microsoft, but like, do you think there's anything that they could do to kind of have the same ubiquity as Spotify? Not that that's a good thing, because again, like, Spotify killed the music industry, but like, playing devil's advocate here, what do you think? Like, the only thing I could think of is lower the price, or maybe have like different tiers of Game Pass, like one that's like only AAA or one that's like more expansive. I don't know how that will work unless you're like continually flooding the service with AAA games. But
yeah, I don't know if they want to do that, like if they want to add more AAA games, because like, people only want the AAA games, right? Or like, that's kind of the thing that we've kind of come to a consensus, is like, people just want to play the big name games. But at the same time, it takes away a lot from smaller games in general. If they were to go to a subscription-based model and have options for their AAA games as well, like, I guess it could work, but honestly, I don't see it being like big enough for. I don't see it becoming big enough for like gamers to really like take advantage of it or want to pay that much in order to just have access to a AAA game, just for a rental or just for a short amount of time, you know?
Mm-hmm. So speaking of rentals, you know what's still kind of alive, Kevin? Gamefly.
Ooh, what? What?
Have you ever used Gamefly? I've always seen like the ads, but I was like, my parents never let me do that. It was like, for me, it was super rare to ever like rent a game at like Blockbuster or something back when Blockbuster still existed. Like, I remember back in, I think it was 2004-ish, like the only game that they would ever let us rent because it was rated like E was Tack and the Power of Juju 2 or Tack 2 and the Staff of Dreams. Because it was multiplayer and it was rated E, but it was only like for a week at a time, and I couldn't even play on the weekday, so it was like a weekend rush grind thing.
Yeah,
but apparently Gamefly is still around, and not only that, the Gamefly is still renting games on the PS2, Xbox, and the Nintendo GameCube. I mean, they're not a lot of games, but they're still on there, and apparently people are still renting them. So on the Xbox, like this is the original Xbox, like the very first one. You can rent Marvel Nemesis, Rise of the Imperfects, and Full Spectrum Warrior, which is looks like some old World War II-ish kind of game. On the PS2, you can rent The Incredibles, which I have played, which is a lot of fun. Persona 3,
Ooh, FES, that's a good one.
Jack 3, Sylphheed the Lost Planet, Rugby 2004, We Love Katamari, okay. Nightshade, Max Payne, The Fall of Max Payne. Oh, if you thought 2004 was funny, listen to this. NHL 2001 and NHL 2002.
Oh, those are the good ones.
I didn't even know they made a rugby video game.
Yeah, I didn't know that existed either.
And then on the GameCube, you can rent Looney Tunes Back in Action,
hey.
based on the movie, and Mario Superstar Baseball.
All right, well, that's something.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just, it's so interesting because I was also looking at some articles that like people are saying, oh, thank God, finally, like the industry is moving on to the next gen consoles and like transitioning away from the PS4 and the Xbox One. And they're just like games are not being made for these older systems as much. But you've still got people playing on the Nintendo GameCube and renting stuff from Gamefly.
I mean, if Gamefly is the only one filling the niche, people are gonna figure that out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
To take advantage of it, like yeah, they had some good Wii games. I might even pick up from Gamefly just because we have that available. I have like a Wii that is functioning, so why not take a shot at it, you know?
Right. Mine is still working. I recently bought the WarioWare game for the Wii because that was a good one, not the Switch one. The Switch one's terrible. But yeah, my Wii still works. My GameCube still works. I think my PS2 still works if I can find it somewhere. The Xbox 360 still works. Like I could rent right now. I could rent Incredibles too. Oh my God, I could rent The Incredibles.
Yeah, if they had NBA Street, I'd
rent Rugby 2004 if I wanted to.
The award-winning game Rugby 2004.
Oh boy, do you ever rent games back in the day, Kevin?
I don't think I rented that many games. I think I saved up and just bought whichever game I wanted. But I didn't like. Yeah, I never really like explored other genres until, you know, until I started getting more into gaming in general. So
right, yeah. like it was super rare for me. And again, I only had a GameCube at the time, and I could only rent games that were like rated T and that were, I think, multiplayer, so that my brother could also play. But it was just, mm-hmm. it was so rare. It like almost never happened. We'd always ask our parents, oh, can we rent this? And it, like, they rarely ever say yes. So when they did say yes, it's like, oh my God. Oh yeah. We also rented like the SpongeBob Battle for Bikini Bottom games and stuff like that too. I remember playing that with
That's a good game.
Yeah. It was on the PlayStation Plus free games, the remastered one. I forgot to get it. So I'm mad at myself, even though I hate platforming games. That would have been like a huge nostalgia kick for me. So I'm mad at myself. I only have myself to blame. But moving on more with these notes. Guess what happened yesterday, Kevin?
I don't know.
Overwatch turned 6 yesterday.
Jesus, that is one ugly toddler.
It's not even a toddler anymore. It's a first grader, my dude.
Oh, it's my God.
It's a first grader.
That's crazy.
Our game has now taken the step from kindergartner to first grader. It can read.
Oh, I don't like that. tell it to be dumb again.
I mean, back when it was dumb, it was more fun, to be honest.
It was more fun when it was dumb.
Yeah, so that happened. 6 whole years. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, it
like
it
I
does
remember
feel
when the trailers
like...
were coming out for that, or the first cinematic was playing on TV, and it's like, okay, this looks fun. I'll pick it up.
Yeah, now 6 years later, we're all salty veterans.
We're like, this game sucks. Why am I still playing it?
Why am I still playing this? I hate this game.
As we load into our 12th comp match of the night, 12th straight loss.
Just one more.
I'll gain some SR back. I gotta do it. But happy things gone. Blizzard is being sued again for something completely different. They are apparently being sued over the card pack expansions for Hearthstone. So the lawsuit against Blizzard is mostly under the fact that like kids can make purchases on these games using their parents' credit cards, and they don't really know what they're doing. This is harkening back to the whole loot box thing with Star Wars Battlefront 2. So there's a parent in Arizona that claims his child purchased, I think, $300 roughly of card packs for Hearthstone. And these, once you buy these packs, like, you can't return them, obviously. And like, there's no indicator to tell you like your chances of getting like the really rare, really good cards. So that is the basis of this lawsuit. And then all this can be done with miners, and that miners make a large part of Blizzard's audience and customer base. So based upon that, that's where the lawsuit is being built. I don't know how successful this honestly will be, considering like even with all the stuff that came out with the loot boxes back with Battlefront 2, like there were attempts to get loot boxes banned, at least in the United States. That did not go through. There are some countries where loot boxes have been severely limited, if not outright banned. Like I know in Belgium, loot boxes were completely banned and you can't buy loot boxes there anymore. I'm not sure what they did to pivot away from that and still kind of earn cosmetics. In Japan, I think, according to Kotaku, or no, according to Screen Rant, in Japan, loot boxes and stuff like that are unjustifiable. Complete gacha games and like loot boxes and stuff violate Japanese laws because they are unjustifiable premiums and misleading representation. So complete gacha games are banned There are probably some other workarounds there. In China, I think they have, you have to like say what the odds are of you getting a certain item and items of certain rarity. And you can only buy a certain number of loot boxes per day. Netherlands, I think there's there's a little bit of a ban in there. It's gambling stuff there. It's weird because in the Netherlands, some loot boxes are banned completely outright. I guess the ones that you can sell are banned outright, but things you can earn are okay because they don't have any market value. You're not really buying them, you're earning them, which is, I guess, where a lot of these lawsuits were starting in the beginning. It's under the purchase. In the Netherlands, loot boxes are referred to as small-scale bingo and have integral elements that are similar to slot machines. So we play bingo every time we open a loot box, Kevin.
That's pretty fun.
Yeah. But yeah, no. And then Belgium completely banned them outright. So I honestly don't think this is going to take in the U.S. I think maybe in other countries you might be more successful, but the U.S. said nah.
Yeah, I don't see them banning loot boxes anytime soon. It's just something that like has been the way how we operate in game right now. I don't know if that's for the greater good of gaming, but I don't know if I really have another solution to it right now other than just like letting us straight up buy the item that we want. But we'll see if that ends up being the case ever.
Okay, so for the last thing, Blizzard revealed the most played characters in the Overwatch 2 beta. They released some graphs online, which I don't have the brain power to really navigate through and comprehend, especially because they're not really well explained. Some characters are bolded in it and some are kind of duller. It might have to do with like their weighted usage rates, because they created one chart that's just the rate hero usage rate timeline across the days of the beta. They also showed a chart with weighted rates where the character usage rates are weighted against how many other heroes there are in the same role. And I mean, one of the most predictable results of this is just that Sojourn started at the top at the beginning of the beta. Everyone wanted to obviously to try Sojourn, and then she kind of fell off as time went on, which may be correlated to why we don't see her really used in League as much, because maybe she's not as useful right now or as handy in the current meta as some other heroes. But if you want, you can look at that online. I don't have the brain power to think about this, but just based on this usage data and this information, the Overwatch team did say that they are going to take this information and do a lot more tweaks to the heroes, and that we should be getting more information regarding that around the 16th of June, which for some reason it sticks in my mind that June 16th, 2005 or 2006 was the last day of fifth grade for me. I don't know why that sticks in my brain.
It's just that time of the night.
And we still have to record the gameplay episode, the League
episode, yeah. Kevin.
Fun. I think this is time for us to stop talking about news right now.
Yeah.
Unless you have anything that you'd like to finish off with us, Kevin. Anything you'd like to add at the very end of our ramble session?
Just enjoy Pokemon. I almost said Pokemon Unite. Man, my brain is all over the place.
I mean, you can enjoy Pokemon Unite. There's nothing stopping.
I mean, yeah, there's nothing stopping you. But yeah, overall, just enjoy Overwatch. There's going to be a lot of like, hopefully, you know, we are slowly approaching that summer season. I will tell you how my wallet is going to be looking once we start getting into the Steam summer sale. Another thing, this is just a fun thing that I've been playing. There is a fan-made version of like a Pokemon game, which is the same style as Inscription, which is another card game. That's not like Pokemon, the It's not like the Pokemon card game, but it is just like a fun style of game. If you guys want to try it, it's called Pocket Crystal League. But it's like playing Pokemon, but with cards that's not Pokemon cards, you know?
Yeah. All right, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to our news episode. Hope y'all brains are doing better than ours. We're just very tired, very stressed 20-somethings.
It's hard.
We're trying. Difficult. We're trying. The hustle culture is killing us slowly. It's reducing our brains to mush. We hope you can understand. Thanks, guys, for tuning in, though, and please listen to our gameplay episode. Play it in the background while you're doing something important, or use us to lull you to sleep. Whatever you do, thanks for listening as always, guys, and we will catch you next week. Adios.
Next week, we update you on the Overwatch League and the world of gaming.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you like what you hear, please like, rate, and subscribe to us, and follow us on all social media at Bleav in OWL. Questions or comments? Send us an email at bleavinowl@gmail.com. If you'd like to advertise with us, you can contact the Bleav Podcast Network. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.